Joining us today is Melissa Sidebottom, a former Charger girl. Melissa has not only wowed crowds with her high-energy performances on the field, but has also become a trailblazer for individuals with hearing loss in the world of professional cheerleading. Melissa has thrived in a field that demands exceptional coordination, timing, and teamwork. Today, she's here to share her story, how she's navigated her cheerleading career, and her work to inspire others in the deaf and hard of hearing community. So, Melissa, welcome. Thanks for coming to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Why don't you tell us about your diagnosis of hearing loss, kind of when that was introduced into your life?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when I was about 5 years old is when my mom and kindergarten teacher noticed that I just wasn't really responding sometimes when I was being talked to. And they took me to the audiologist, and lo and behold, I had a hearing loss in both my ears. So that's what started my journey into hearing aids, analog hearing aids at the time. And then just kind of progressed from there to obviously digital hearing aids, and then more recently a cochlear implant.
In your experience with the Chargers and with the NFL, what technology did you have at the time? And did technology advancements while you were a part of the NFL play any role in your professional life?
At the time, so this was almost 15 years ago, which is hard to believe. And at the time, I was wearing a digital in-the-ear hearing aid in just one ear, in my left ear, because my right ear was too far beyond help at that point. So I was only wearing one hearing aid, a digital. And I actually felt I wasn't leveraging any type of Bluetooth technology to help with, you know, audio at the games or anything like that. That's happened within the last, you know, I would say 5 to 10 years, those advancements. So I think I did kind of probably missed out on what could have helped me had I have been a cheerleader today.
So your hearing was asymmetric. So your left ear, has it always been better than your right ear?
That's right. Yes, it has.
Interesting. I know that you had some dance training when you were growing up. How did dance kind of evolve for you into cheerleading?
I started dancing, doing, you know, classically trained ballet and jazz, tap when I was in kindergarten at age 5, and pretty much stayed the course of that up until I got to high school, where I was both a cheerleader and on a dance team in high school. And that's where I just learned how much I loved being a part of a team, right? And that general camaraderie and all of that was great. And then we went to college. I was also on the dance team in college too. So once I moved out to San Diego after graduation, I felt I needed the dance to be part of my life in some way, shape, or form. And I didn't want to just take dance lessons. So I really started looking at, what teams can I be a part of? How can I, you know, fulfill that? And I, of course, wanted to be a part of either NFL or NBA. And in San Diego, where I was living, the Chargers were currently there. And I auditioned to be a cheerleader. So what I will say, though, is that the NFL cheerleading style is not really what you would think in terms of like a high school cheerleader style, right? You're not yelling out cheers or doing a ton of tumbling. You can tumble, but it's more of a dance team style than a cheerleading style overall.
Can you tell us about the audition process for how it works to become a cheerleader for them?
It's pretty intense. I'm sure a lot of people are aware now, just with the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders in a TV show. That process is even more intense than what we went through with the Chargers. But it's pretty intense. There's hundreds of girls that come. There's multiple rounds of auditions that you have to go through if you keep making it past the different rounds. And I tried out 6 times. And I was told no 6 times, but I did make it to finals 5 of the 6 of those times as well. But the audition process is very grueling. You're in this big auditorium, you learn to dance, you perform in groups of 3 for the judges initially. They make a bunch of cuts right on that day. If you come back, then there's an interview round and process. There's more of a casual chit-chat sort of round as well. And then there's a final dance audition where you perform by yourself too, and do an individual solo audition there as well. So it's pretty intense.
Oh my God.
Do you feel like your experience growing up from the age of 5 onward with hearing loss that helped you build resilience that maybe led you to that audition number 7?
100%. Yes, 100%. I always think about this. I would not be who I am today had I not had a hearing loss and had I not learned the tools to beat adversity and to really keep trying. Like failing or things are hard, things are challenging, but I'm gonna figure it out, right? And that mindset has really like led me to like who I am today, right? Because I don't give up. I don't want to give up.
Can you talk more about that kind of building that resilience? Because it's a common thread that we hear from, whether it's the parents of younger children from the first diagnosis through their experience with the hearing loss, or people who now are adults that had experienced hearing loss from childhood, how almost important it is to the person they became that this was a part of their life.
I mean, I will say it is such a key part of me. And anyone I meet and talk to, if they're, it doesn't have to be hearing loss, but of course, that's the one that relates to me the most, right? But in general, like you can and should figure this out because it's to your benefit at the end of the day, right? Like giving up and not being resilient and complaining and whining about it. I mean, everyone can do that too, right? You should have a good vent session. Like that's healthy, right? But I think that's really important to build those skills and to keep trying, right? At the end of the day. And I just always think about how if I didn't try, right, what I would have not accomplished as a result of that. And yeah, maybe things were a little harder for me or a little more challenging, but with practice, it gets easier, right? I think just me practicing that resilience has gotten me to the stage today where it's not as hard anymore. So it's still challenging, right? Every day has its challenges, but I'm sure everyone can say the same thing about something in their lives, right? So it's been important.
I can imagine in an audition process like that, where you had said it's a big auditorium, it must have a lot of reverberation and echoes, so many girls talking at the same time, music blaring in the background. Did you kind of learn year after year of auditioning of kind of how to compensate or overcome those, what I would call kind of environmental barriers?
What I've gotten really good at body language, right? And just really adapting to visual cues in general. So one thing I will say for auditions, what I would do is because we would perform in maybe groups of three, and I had never heard the song before, the audition song. So I couldn't really practice ahead of time to think about, okay, five, six, seven, eight, or this bass is gonna come in. I didn't have the ability to know that up front. And so because we were in groups of three, I would talk to either the girl in front or behind me and make friends with her and just ask her, like, hey, could you tap your leg on four for me or something like that? And then sometimes if I maybe didn't have someone who was willing to do that, and maybe they were anxious too, of course, right? About just the audition in general, I would just leverage peripherals, honestly, and just be ready to go. The minute I saw them moving, I'm like, all right, song started, we gotta go, right? But yeah, I couldn't really hear the beat, especially in an auditorium with the echo. It was not clear for me.
Was there anything in the cheering environment that your hearing loss wound up being a positive for you?
The team building aspect of it, right? I don't know if that was because of the cheering environment, but I had to lean on and trust my teammates that much more. So me having a hearing loss and needing them, right? And us needing to work together just like brought us all closer together.
To be that cheerleading is one of those collaborative sports where you're heavily reliant on other people to catch you, to make the same moves in synchrony with each other. And if you get even, I would assume, if you get even one move wrong, someone's either on the ground or it throws everybody off. So I'm curious that once you joined and you came on, Did people look at you either differently or hesitantly of how is this going to work for them with your hearing loss? Or did people look at you differently and or were they very comfortable off the bat?
I did not observe that anyone ever treated me or looked at me differently in the team environment, right? I don't know if I was fortunate enough to just be with just great team members and people who were understanding and patient and willing to work together to figure it out. But I've never fortunately encountered that, like, in a negative stance. Like, I've never encountered like anyone looking at me differently within the team and general public, of course, I've encountered that, but not within the teams that I've been on.
And how was it being a part of the NFL, and how accommodating were they to meet what your needs were?
They were great, to be honest. So, like, the Charger girls in particular weren't employed directly by the NFL or the Chargers. So there was like a third party company, production company that they hired and actually like paid us, right?
Got it.
Separately. But in general, I mean, they were fantastic and accommodating and really whatever I needed. And they wanted to share my story. They were very inspired and motivated at the end of the day. So it was just a very cool experience.
I love hearing the positive spin on how you were integrated into and onto your team, because we've spoken to some other athletes who have said that when they first started their professional career, people just assumed that they couldn't communicate, that they were going to socially isolate themselves voluntarily, and that it created kind of a divide between the other teammates and themselves, and they had to prove themselves that much more to say they know how to have a conversation, they know how to play the sport just as well as everybody else, but had to try that much harder. And it seems like your experience has been that people really have been, for the most part, very willing to help with the cues, and that you were just as entitled to be there as everybody else.
Yeah, I think that's 100% right. And I do wonder if it has to do with I was very upfront from the moment I met them, right? The moment I met everyone on this team of like, hey, I do have a hearing loss. I do wear hearing aids that help me with it. I have a dance background. I know what I'm doing. Like, I'm qualified to be here, that kind of thing, right? And just kind of approached it very upfront and transparently. And I don't know if maybe that is what helped kind of set the stage for what I was getting into. So yeah, thankfully I didn't have that experience up front.
And you said that the NFL wanted to share your story. Can you talk about that? How your story was shared and how it got out?
Like, through my coach and through, interviews that were essentially set up overall. I'm not exactly sure how the chain started, right, for how it got out initially, but I had interviews with like E! Entertainment and Good Morning America and Fox News, like the local station there, and then it led to different article interviews as well with like Esquire and things like that. Really, yeah, it was really kind of exploded. I kind of felt like great out of nowhere, where all of a sudden everyone wanted to talk about my story and learn more, and we're really interested in, oh, you can't hear well. How are you doing this? Right? How are you actually performing for thousands and thousands of people, right? With music, right? At an NFL game. So
Did you mention, you may have mentioned earlier, if I got this right, that you wore a single in-the-ear hearing aid around that time?
correct.
Was that an aesthetic choice or a vision or a convenience choice? Because I know you originally had BTEs. I'm curious of the switch to an in the ear. Usually people are, if they're used to it and they're happy with it, they stay with the same kind of hearing aid. So what's for the switch?
Yeah, that's a great question. If I could go back to 21-year-old Melissa, I would have told her to just wear the behind-the-ear hearing aid because you can hear so much better with it. But yeah, it was an aesthetic choice at the time, like being a young adult, for the first time on their own and in my early 20s in San Diego. I just kind of decided, oh, I think I'm fine. I can use an in-the-ear, and I kind of made that choice. My audiologist didn't necessarily agree with my choice there, right? But I was like, I'm fine. I can hear fine with this. So yeah, so that's why. And then I also stopped wearing a hearing aid in my other ear, my right ear, at that same time. So I went from having two behind-ear hearing aids that were analog to one in-ear digital hearing
Oh my,
aid at
that's an
the same time.
adjustment.
And how come you
Yeah.
got rid of the right ear?
So the right ear, because my speech recognition was so low in my right ear, I was essentially amplifying sound that I couldn't hear, understand well. And so it wasn't, although it was helping me with audio awareness, it
Yes.
was making it harder for me to understand words.
Got it. Yeah, I think it's something that people who aren't familiar with hearing loss don't understand necessarily, that just because sound is louder doesn't mean that it's clearer. And there are
Exactly.
times where that louder sound can become a distraction. Not everybody benefits from two hearing aids. Most do, but not everybody. And it sounds like you were one of those cases where two was not the best option.
That's exactly right. And I will say, since I received the cochlear implant last year in my right ear, speech clarity is incredible. I still cannot believe how good it is. Like, I went from 0% recognition scores in the booth, right, to now I'm at like 93%
Wow.
speech
That's
recognition.
phenomenal.
Yes,
And
I
so
still can't believe it.
your right ear is your better ear now.
It is. Oh, 100% better.
Yeah.
Yes, it's like I can take out my hearing aid and understand words better. A little bit more robotic, right? But I can understand speech better than with my hearing aid on.
You said you had been implanted about a year or so ago, maybe a little bit more than that. What led to the decision to move forward with it?
Yeah. So I've been told, so I got implanted in April of 2024, so a little less than a year now. And I've been told by my audiologist for 20 years that I am a cochlear implant candidate and that I should think about it. And I always said, no, thank you. I'm fine. I'm getting by just fine, you know, and I just kind of like ignored it. At the time, though, to be fair, 20 years ago, the technology was not as good, even aesthetically, right? There was like a physical neck loop. And so imagine 21-year-old Melissa, who wants to just forgo behind the ear hearing aid, she's not doing a
Sure.
cochlear implant. So that wasn't an option for me. But I had a coworker, a former colleague, who had a cochlear implant a couple of years ago that I worked with. And he was telling me, he was younger than me, very active, right? We had a similar hearing loss. And he was telling me these stories about how much better he could hear and how much better he could understand speech. And he told me a story about how his partner was upstairs calling him. And he said, I understood him. He's like, I understood everything he said. And I was like, what is that like? Right? That hasn't ever happened to me before. And so, anyways, through those stories, that kind of led to me to say, okay, Melissa, time to like really look into this and see what the possibilities are. So that's what led me to get evaluated for it and then actually get implanted last year.
How was that evaluation process? Because we see with our patients that even when they know they're going to be a candidate, and even when they know these tests are incredibly difficult that we're administering during that evaluation process, that it oftentimes is a very emotional experience and sometimes a very negative experience to see how much struggle they're having. How was that experience for you?
So the evaluation process was very easy. I don't know if it's because I knew I was a candidate. I've been told I was a candidate for so long. I am a researcher at heart, so I had done so much research. Once I kind of said, okay, this might be something I want to do, so I kind of had a sense of what to expect, right, overall. And I got implanted through Johns Hopkins, and they were fantastic in terms of like the evaluation of saying, yes, you are a candidate, you should move forward, getting, you know, the surgery on the books. All of that was very straightforward and pretty easy, to be honest. I think the one part that maybe was a little more frustrating was just what manufacturer brand to choose for a cochlear implant. And the fact that it was on me to do that, I don't know. They all seem good, right? Like,
Yeah.
and you had the comparison chart, and I didn't really, I of course met with all of them separately, the brands, and tried to evaluate which was right for me. But at the end of the day, I didn't really know which brand to choose. I just kind of went with my gut on that. So I would say, like, if that was more guided potentially, like by an audiologist, to say, like, yes, you should go with this brand because based on the lifestyle, ask me some questions and then say, like, yeah,
Right.
we go here. That would have been helpful.
Was that different for you than the hearing aid selection process? Historically, was it a specific manufacturer recommended specific product?
Yes. That's actually a good way to compare it. In the past, it's always been, yeah, you should get, I've always had Resound, right? So you should always get Resound hearing aids. You're used to it, like the sound quality or what you're hearing. So this is what you should get. If this is the technology you want, this is the model I recommend, and I'll order it and let's go.
And did you have Resound when you got implanted?
So I didn't have a hearing aid in my right ear because I have
Right, but
not in the
on the
right one, but I
left.
do wear in my left ear, I have a Resound hearing aid. Oh,
Okay.
cool.
So
So
they could be linked.
yeah, exactly. So that was part of why I was like, oh, if they can be linked, I guess maybe that's what I should do.
Thinking back to when you said that your audiologist disagreed with you at the time of you wanted the in the ear, they said that might not be the best overall hearing option for you, the audiological recommendation. And you can make an argument for that, and probably we as audiologists would think the same. But on the other side of the argument, we always say to our patients that the best hearing aid is the one that somebody's actually going to wear, that it's better to wear the in the ear one while you're out cheerleading than if you were to have left it at home, saying that you don't want it to be visible. And similar with the CI experience, somebody could tell you you're a candidate for years. If you're not ready for it, it's not the right time. And most people who are hesitating on the fence about it, eventually they'll come around, they'll know when it's time.
I think that's right, but I will say, and of course, I can't go back in time. But if I could go back in time, I would do this cochlear so much earlier, right? It's been such a life-changing experience for me and improved the quality of my life so much. And even thinking of going back to dancing and cheerleading. So I was on a dance team in college, as I mentioned. And recently, my college had a reunion, a dance team reunion, where we got together, all the alumni and from the dance team, and performed at halftime for a basketball game at the college.
Wow.
What? So it was really cool, first of all. Second of all, I heard the music perfectly. I was like blown away, like almost to tears, because all these struggles I've had with performing in the past and really not knowing when to start. And this was a live band playing too. It was an actual like pep band playing the music, not even on the audio, right? And I heard it perfectly. I knew exactly when to start. I could stay on the beat. It was pretty cool.
That's fantastic. Would you ever consider doing the surgery on your left ear?
I have considered it. I'm still considering it. I think that because I've heard or my doctor had said, it could increase the chances of vertigo, of having like more permanent vertigo if you're implanted in both ears. I've been like hesitant to keep exploring just because if I couldn't reverse that, right? Or, potentially lose the residual hearing in my left ear. I'm on the fence. I could be persuaded either way. I'm already at a point where this is so life-changing and helped me so much. I'm happy where I'm at, right? If it could get better, hey, maybe that's worth exploring.
Along your journey, is there anything that you felt like your audiologist could have done better or that might have helped you along the process? That's a question we've liked to ask people who've experienced hearing loss because we always want to get better at what we're doing and how we interact with our patients.
A great question. I don't know if this was a product of the time I was living in, but I always wished that my audiologist, I'll say plural because I've had many of them, knew more about the technology and knew more about how to leverage technology to be innovative or to help what I'm doing. Yeah, I think my recent experience with the cochlear has been great. And my audiologist knows so much, and we're like on my phone during the appointments, and she's linking everything. And I didn't have that experience in the past. It was me having to try to figure out, like, do the research myself or see what else is out there. Oh, there might be an accessory. I would buy it. And then she didn't know how to link it for me, right? So I think there was that aspect of like staying up to date. I felt like I missed out on a little bit.
And speaking of the accessories, while we're having this conversation, are you using any accessories for this, or are you just coming straight from the speakers?
So I'm actually coming straight from the speaker for this particular conversation. But on my work laptop, I do have my cochlear connected to my Bluetooth. So for my work laptop, I do leverage Bluetooth to hear the audio directly in my head.
We love
Awesome.
that.
Yes.
We love that.
Me too.
You've lived kind of multiple places throughout the country. Has it ever posed an issue for you of having your hearing care managed from one state to another, whether it's transferring all over your files or just kind of different state regulations in terms of audiology stuff? How does that work for you when you move?
I had like an audiologist in San Diego, and then when I moved to Los Angeles, I actually found a great audiologist there. And paperwork wise, I think it was like, oh, fax the paperwork at the time, right? And that kind of worked out for the most part. And my audiologist in LA was fantastic too. She was definitely like up to date on innovation and taught me a lot about what's possible too. And then when I moved from Los Angeles to Virginia, where I'm living now, there it was fine in terms of paperwork. I think I waited a long time though to find an audiologist here. I probably went 6 years without seeing an audiologist when I moved here, just because of I didn't know who to go to. I reached out to my LA audiologist. She didn't know anybody here. I was kind of looking for like a recommendation. I didn't know anyone personally in Virginia that saw an audiologist. So I think there was just a little bit of a challenge, like getting that over. And then I also felt like I didn't have my paperwork from like when I was 5 to when I was a young adult. So that there was also kind of like a lost amount of information there too.
I could just imagine seeing an audiologist and having them say, like, oh, maybe you should see an ENT. When meanwhile, you've had a lifetime's worth of hearing loss and ENT and paperwork stacked up. But if people don't see those records, they just assume you haven't done it.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
You've been very involved in advocacy work for hearing loss in the deaf community. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I definitely had the platform being an NFL cheerleader to be able to talk about like overcoming adversity and why you should advocate for yourself, right? No matter what, you may have or what's stopping you, right? At the end of the day, personally, I've just been passionate about is helping others through this, like helping people that may not know that there's things that they can do, helping people understand that you are, you should really learn the ADA like accommodations that are available to you through your employer, and you should use those and you should leverage them. Like there's nothing, you shouldn't feel guilty about that. You shouldn't feel shy or bad about it, right? Because that will help you do your job, better. And so I through just relationship building, I've been able to help out people in similar situations. And it's just something I want to do more of, right? I haven't necessarily done as much as I want to, right? That's just something I really believe in. And I hope that I can continue to do that kind of work so that people don't feel blocked by, what they have, and they can move forward and do be their best, essentially.
One question that we've liked to ask of people, and especially in the context of advocacy, we get to have the pleasure of being a part of our patient's hearing journey. Can you think of a time through your advocacy or even in your past work where you felt like you became a part of somebody's story, where you got to have positive influence in a way that was really meaningful for you?
Yeah, I mean, I can think of, maybe this is a small example, but I think it had a large impact on like my former colleague. She was really struggling with doing her job because it required her to be on the phone. And it was a landline phone. We were in the office, right, 24/7. And She was talking to me a lot because, again, like we could relate over both having a hearing loss. And she was just baffled at how am I able to do this, right? And I told her, I was like, hey, I have this transcript service. So at the time, before AI existed, I was able to contract someone who would dial in third party and then manually type out what's being said on the phone, right?
Like a
So
relay
I can
service.
exactly. It's very similar to a relay service, yes. And so I told her about that, and then she was very hesitant because she was like, I don't want the company to pay for it. I don't want to put them out. Like I'm already like I need to be able to do my job regardless. Anyways, long story short, I was able to like help her draft an email and essentially ended up also talking to her manager and sharing, my experience and basically like presenting a business case to say like, hey, her productivity and output is going to be like this much better if you just invest this. And it's ADA, like I put that whole like piece in it too, right? Like you have to do this for her. Like this is important, like as her manager. And so she ended up getting it. And I remember the first time like she came over to me and was just so appreciative and in tears about how much like I helped her because she's no longer anxious all day long from being on the phone and not understanding what's being said, and she can't do her job properly. So that was like a little moment, but it was really great.
Most people spend the majority of their day at work, so when you can't do your job, that's a big deal. So it sounds like it's a very practical way to make her life substantially better.
Yeah, exactly right.
So my last question for you is whether for our listeners out there, either if they have hearing loss or some other limitation, but are striving for goals, whether it's sports or other professionally related, what's a piece of advice you would want for them to know as they're going through the early stages, not sure if they can kind of get to where they want to be?
You like can do whatever you set your mind to. It sounds so cliche, but at the end of the day, if you want something, whatever is holding you back is not really holding you back. And maybe your path to getting there isn't the same as someone else who doesn't have whatever it is blocker that you have. And so just figuring out how to get there is what you need to do. Just like figure it out. There are options. You may fail. You may fall multiple times, right? And that's okay. But you can get there. Like just keep going because at the end of the day, you're the one that's gonna like reap the benefits of this, right? Like this is for you. Like you being your own advocate is just so important. And don't wait to do it either, right? Like there's time is precious. And yeah, I just encourage everyone to advocate for yourself and do it now.
Because the seventh time might be the charm,
Yeah.
and you want to give yourself those opportunities.
Exactly right. And
So, my last question, do you have any specific memories of your time in the NFL that really stick out to you, whether it was fun, whether it was meaningful, whatever it was that really was memorable?
so many amazing, incredible memories that I have during that time. And probably my favorite is because I made so many like near and dear friends on the team, like during my time, just the time spent with them, honestly, like in the locker rooms, actually at the games, doing at practice, fun activities that we did together, being able to share that experience, this, out of body, crazy, big, awesome experience that a lot of people don't get to actually experience doing that together. And we all cared about each other. We still care about each other so much, and we're still friends, right? That's probably in general, it kind of sums up my favorite memories.
We really appreciate you sharing your story. For the people who want to look into certain goals professionally but aren't sure if they can quite do it, you're a prime inspiration that nothing can hold you back, that if you set your mind to it with practice, with perseverance, you really can achieve your goal. So we really appreciate your time. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you, where they can learn more about you or connect with you?
Thank you, first of all, thank you for saying that. I really appreciate you guys having me on here. It's been fantastic to just talk about my story again, and be able to share my personal life. I'm going to continue to advocate for close, loved ones or friends or anyone I meet as much as I can. And then, of course, like I am going to continue to network in different places where I can to really truly help people and help them advocate for themselves. So no clear dotted line plans quite yet, but you will be seeing more of me. I'll leave it at that.
Maybe this podcast is the first next step.
There you go.
We look forward to seeing your future work out there, because what you're promoting, what you're advocating for is really important, and not everyone would step up to the plate. So keep at it.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.